This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 436 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me via Skype, Goldfinger. Mr. Glyn Lavender from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au. How are you?
Well, I'd like to thank everyone for having me tonight. It's lovely to be here.
Excellent. How's the gold prospecting going?
Well, a funny thing happened this week.
Yeah, do tell.
If you saw that there's a post on their page that a father and his two daughters, whilst out going for a walk, found a $35,000 gold nugget.
Right.
And because me and my two daughters are going out looking for gold, and there was a bit of, is that you? Is that you? Unfortunately, no. That wouldn't be me.
Where did this
occur?
I've only been
out the once. Sorry, was it?
Where did this occur?
About an hour from my house.
The guy that found the $35,000 nugget?
Yeah.
You're kidding.
Yeah. Shh. No, but that's where all the gold is. I mean, all the gold's in that, like, hour to hour and a half from my place. They reckon there's 500 million ounces of gold still sitting there. And
wow.
And when gold is worth, you know, 1,700 US times 500 million ounces, it adds up to...
pretty penny.
It's dollars we're talking to. It's dollars.
Oh, wow.
We want pennies. I don't even want pretty pennies. I want lots of big, big wads of thick hundreds.
Yes.
So unfortunately, no, that wasn't me. But all us experienced people on the gold forums
right,
have been poo-pooing the discovery of this nugget.
Why?
Because, well, apparently, A, the father and his two daughters are out for a walk with their dog Lucky. Now, for a while there, I was going to go out and buy a dog called Lucky if this dog's fine. Anyway, they're out for a walk on Mother's Day. Now, first up, what dad takes his two daughters away for a walk without the mother on Mother's Day?
Well, Mum was probably having a sleep in and quite appreciated
it. So he's taking a walk on Mother's Day, so it'll be called bunk him on that straight away. Right. Secondly, the picture of the comments is he's been having sleepless nights since they found it. He said right. The article was reported the day after Mother's Day.
Right.
Okay. So his sleepless nights have been going for, well,
one
more than one.
Yeah.
Then the gold was already cleaned. It had an acid bath on it to clean up the, which could take a couple of days.
Right.
So again, yeah, bunk him on the old Mother's Day. And apparently he walked right past it, but his daughter stumbled on it.
Right.
And she stubbed her toe and then said, "Dad, is this gold?" Now, the law in Victoria is if you find a gold nugget and you don't have a mining license, a prospector's license, it belongs to the government.
Oh, really?
Unless you're a child.
Oh.
So it's convenient. The kid found the nugget. Yeah, sure. The kid found it.
Right.
Yeah, me being the cynical, semi-cynical sod that I am, I would just say, you know, you can get a mining license online. It's $24.20 for 10 years.
Right.
You pop your cash down there. A couple of days later, I found the nugget.
Yeah.
Because you know what? You're only asking for trouble. You say your daughter found it.
Yeah.
When she hits 18, so she's going to sue you for that money.
Yeah.
It was mine, Dad. I found it, apparently. I know you brought it home one day, but I found it, according to me. Where's my money? You spent my money, Dad. That was my nugget.
Yeah.
Just asking for trouble. So unfortunately, you know, I've only been out for gold once this week.
Right.
And most of it was just a look-see, just to look around. And I was looking at a few new areas. And I came across this one area, and it's so damn daunting, I've got to tell you. You look at this massive hillside. I found this gold area where it had been mined. I don't know, it's 20 kilometres long by 5 kilometres wide of continuous diggings.
Right.
Where do you even start? It's just so much. It's just like you look at it, and just there's just no way you can even comprehend trying to find something you're smaller than your fingernail, yeah, in this enormous swag of bloody stuff. So it's pretty. So what I did do though, and I have is I went into a creek near this area, which is known for its alluvial gold,
yep.
And I filled a bucket, especially I got a bucket with a lid. I filled it with gold bearing dirt, hopefully,
right,
and brought it home. The kids to pan at home.
Right.
Because you can't, kids can't always come out with me, but they want to be they want to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
So I brought a big bucket of dirt home, so we're going to try and wash some of that on the weekend or something. You know, just kind of. I've been in Rockhampton.
Next all thing, Glyn will be heading up there with a bloody 6x4 box trailer and a shovel.
By law, you're only allowed to move 1 cubic metre of dirt a day.
Oh, is that right?
Which is a fair amount of dirt if you've got a shovel. Yes. That's a fair bit of effort. But yeah, that's the law, 1 cubic metre. I said, no, I've been up into Rockhampton all weekend.
How was that?
You know, it's bloody hot.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, I left here. It's the charming time of 4:30 in the morning, 6 degrees and pouring rain.
Nice.
Arrived at 10 o'clock in the morning, to 32 degrees and pretty decent humidity.
Yeah, that's a bit of a change.
Yeah, it was just but the weather was it was okay all week. It was a bit humid for my taste, but but we had a good time. Friday night, I did a talk on travel portraits, which. Went down pretty darn well.
Nice.
You can always tell it goes down well by how many questions are asked at the end.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, yes and no. I give an awful lot of information during my talks.
Yep.
So a lot of questions are answered as I go along anyway.
Right.
I had a 244-page presentation to get through.
3 minutes, yeah.
No, I took my time. I slowed down. It took me 62. It's only 4 a minute, But the worst thing is that my clickety-click to change slides wasn't working.
Oh, no.
So I had to manually.
Did you forget to take the batteries with you again?
No, I had the battery. It was all ready to go. In fact, it was lighting up. The little receiver was lighting up at the back of the computer saying it was receiving a signal.
Right.
And it worked flawlessly in testing earlier that morning.
Oh, as it always does.
Failed miserably on the night. So I had this lady sitting there, and every time I waggled my hand, she had to change a slide. You know, and of course, they said if you're doing 244 pages, it's a fair amount of clicks. But some of them are like click, 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 click. As it's point.
You'll be getting a letter from her lawyer next week with an RSI claim.
But here's the thing, though: I tend to talk with my arms anyway, so she's changing slides. And I don't want to. So let's go back 3. There you go. Yeah. So that was a bit of fun. And then the following day, I did 4. Natural light portrait sessions of an hour and a half each.
Right.
For 4 different groups.
Wow.
And the model we had in the afternoon, she was 12 years old.
Oh, okay.
Going on 13. I know, it wouldn't be my normal choice, but it's what the club got through a modelling agency.
Oh,
but
gets
this, so she's 12 going on 13. She was taller than me.
Oh, wow.
So she's 6'1" at 12.
Wow.
Wow.
She could have a very serious modelling career ahead of her if she chooses.
Yeah, well, she was very serious. I could hardly get a smile out of her. Yeah. Telling dad jokes, doing everything, nada. I was so in love with the photos. I haven't looked at any of them since I shot them. In fact, I haven't taken the camera in my bag yet. So, right. But, yeah, it was an exhausting day. Trying to teach. So I taught 24, 25 people over the course of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Being on. Yeah, trying to make sure everyone gets a similar amount of lessons and things learnt. But, of course, during the course of the day, the light changes completely. Now, the sun was out all day, but that's where the light is, where it is. And so you're constantly chasing every single hour and a half. You have to come up with a whole new plan about where to shoot. You know, I was trying to produce black backgrounds for people, teach people how to use lenses as a portrait photographer, all sorts of these lessons. Of course, I had to find a different location every damn time. In the town, I don't know very well.
I was going to say, were these areas within Rocky where you have shot previously? And
yeah, there is, but nowhere near. Well, there was one laneway that I used that I've used previously, but everything else was new.
Jeez.
But yeah, and of course, in an hour and a half, you don't have time to go very far. But I'm trying to seek out.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I've taught one skill to one group, I wanted to make sure. All of them got the same skill because that way, if they're talking to each other, they get the relatable experiences.
Yeah.
So it was somewhat challenging. I was in need of a beer by the end, I'll tell you, that's for sure.
Yeah. Excellent. But, so talking about camera bags.
Yes. I got a new one.
Yes.
I got myself a new one arrived today. Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
So my eldest is a scout.
Right.
And she's going on a scout hike this weekend.
Right.
Yeah, the scouts had said, that we have a certain amount of loan gear available, loan packs. If you don't have your own pack and you need a pack, let us know and we'll see how we can go.
Right.
So no worries. No, we put it out. Yes, we'd like a pack because he doesn't have a proper hiking backpack.
Yeah.
Tuesday lunchtime, get an email from the scout. I'm sorry, your child has not. We have limited resources. Your child has not got a backpack organised for her. Damn. Now, I didn't want to go out and drop 300 on a bag.
No.
For a 2-day camp. And she'll use it down the track, I know. But anyway, didn't want to run out and spend it if I didn't have to.
Yeah.
But I had planned on getting a new bag for Africa.
Right.
And the bag I planned to get was mostly a backpack with a little removable part down the bottom where the camera goes in.
Oh, okay.
And when that comes out, it's a full-on backpack.
Yep.
So I got in touch with Mindshift and said, look, I was planning on taking this to Africa. Any chance to have one before the weekend? So it's like a $400 bag.
Yeah.
They said, yeah, no, we should be able to organize. We'll let you know. And came back to me about 5 o'clock. Yeah, no worries. We've got a bag for you. He said, great. I'll be there on Thursday to pick it up. The kid goes to Scouts on Tuesday night. She comes out of Scout with a backpack on her back.
Oh.
I said, where'd that come from? She goes, I don't know. This woman gave it to me. And I'm thinking, also, if I'd gone up and dropped 3 large for a bag, I'd be pretty friggin' unimpressed.
Oh, yeah.
They just got out and bought this after because they told you couldn't have one.
Yeah.
Bloody communication issues. we constantly battle with these people about their lack of communication. It just kills us. So the bag is awesome. The only problem with it is it's blue, and the tsetse flies love the blue or the black.
Right.
But the bag only comes in blue or black, so you can't really have much. Really have much of a choice if you want that particular bag.
Yeah.
But the bag in question I got is the Mindshift Gear, the ultra light dual 36 liter.
Right.
So it's ultra light, as his name. But when there's nothing in it, including the camera bag, it's light. It's ultra. In fact, it's ultra light. You could say. it's beautiful light, and it looks like a terrific bag. So even if you had to carry an awful lot of gear and camping, food, etc., you could pull the little camera bit out, use that just over your shoulder like a normal camera bag,
right,
and fill the bag up. So it's a great little bag. I'm really impressed with it.
Nice.
I haven't loaded any gear into it yet.
But I'm loving the bag that I got, which is half the size of that. Mine's an 18 liter.
Yeah, you got the 18 on the what series was that again? I've got them too. Ultralight. No, backlight.
Backlight. That's the one. Yep.
Yeah.
That's a great bag. Really happy with it.
Yeah, so I've got the 36 and the 18, and you've got the 18 too, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it comes in 26 as well. So Ray, one of the guys that's coming with me in January, February next year for Africa, he's tossing and turning between the 36 and the 26.
Right.
To take. 26, of course, is one of those bags. Same with the 18. We'll get in a plane, no problem at all.
Yeah.
The 36 is that little bit bigger. You're just hoping they don't try and measure it.
Yeah, right.
But I think it's might be like maximum size for international, but some of the local planes might be a bit of a squeeze.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, I took that 36 litre up to Rockhampton with me, and one of them was a prop plane, and I had to take my laptop out. Just to make sure it was flat enough to get into the bulkhead.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, only because the plane, it's a little prop plane. It was pretty small.
Yeah, well, as I said when I bought that bag, I deliberately went for the 18 so that it will force me to travel lighter.
Yeah.
Because I have...
But see, I want to travel heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah, heavy. Here's my camera bag. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, for you, I mean... But, it's always that thing. Oh, I'll force me to travel lighter, but what compromise? Can you not?
The thing is, I've always come home from trips away.
Yeah.
With gear that I took and never used, and I thought, I've got to learn to, just let go a little bit, and
Well, in one of my gold panning videos I was watching just the other day, this guy, he used to be an ultralight backpacker, and he was right into all the ultralight camping, ultralight everything. So his philosophy when it came to walking fair distances up, bush tracks to find gold is to go as light as possible as well.
Sure.
And he said his philosophy was every time he came back from a hike, whatever he didn't use that day, he took out and left in the car.
Right.
And so every time you do 4 or 5 trips, and eventually you'd be leaving a bunch of stuff behind.
Yep.
And then only if he started to realise, oh, I need that, and it's not there, then will he maybe add it back to the kit.
Yep.
So it's probably, it might be a good thing to do with camera bags. You go out for X amount of days for the type of stuff that you normally do, and everything you don't use, you just leave behind.
Yeah.
You know? And slowly weed it out that way. And then only if you start finding, you know, you're hitting a wall, oh, I really needed that, do you re-include it to your bag.
Yeah. So that's obviously going to bite me in the bum when I'm in Sri Lanka.
Exactly.
Because I won't be able to just duck home and pick it up. But, you know, that's...
That's why you sort of hope you've refined that process before you go on something. And put. But then again, you get thrown into a new environment, which may have new needs.
Yeah.
I just... Yeah, so I'm really... one of the other things I want to talk about tonight is the new Tamron 35 to 150. And I was out at Tamron just today, and we were talking about that as, for example, if you want to travel light, well, if you've got the 17 to 35 and 35 to 150, you've pretty much got a big range
almost,
all covered.
Almost 10x,
Yeah, where in the past it was like, I might carry the 17 to 35 and the 70 to 200, so you've got that little gap in the middle, you know, and I think I'm not sure how much I missed that gap necessarily, but I think it was, if you look at packing small and light, that's a pretty comprehensive travel kit.
Yeah.
For the majority of stuff you're going to shoot, 17 to 150 should really cover it, you'd imagine.
Yeah.
For most needs, but there. So have you decided when you're going to Sri Lanka?
Well, it was going to be July. However, as mentioned last week, My contract at Ultimo came up, so I had a week where I was unemployed. Friday of last week, which was the day after we recorded, I headed up to Newcastle to have a chat with the ABC at Newcastle, and they said, can you start Monday? And I went, yep. unfortunately, it's only a three-day-a-week thing, but that's okay. That covers my bills, so I'm going to be doing 3 days a week up there for the next approximately 10 weeks, but there's always the possibility that it will get extended, you know, like the previous
contract. Can't you just say to them, no, I think you should say, look, can I do 6 weeks and 5 days a week rather than 10 days and three? Would that not work?
Maybe, maybe not. The good thing is, though, the guy in Sydney that I got in touch with to say, hey, have you got any work going? He came back to me after he'd seen my CV.
He said, who are you?
And he said, look, I don't know if you want to go this far, but there might be some work up in Newcastle. And I said, well, it's no further to go to Newcastle than it is to go to Sydney. And what I have found this week in the 3 days of, you know, doing that train trip is I'm going against the flow, which is great. So I'm basically sitting in an empty train because there's almost no one going to Newcastle because everyone's headed to Sydney in the morning. And then in the evening, it's much the same story. There's not many people heading south. So that's been great. Yeah, and loving the work, and they're loving what I'm doing. And yeah, so because of that being a 10-week thing, that's pretty much going to take us through till probably the end of July, early August. So Kath and I have just sort of said, well, you know, we'll play it by ear and see what happens after, you know, after that 10 weeks is up.
Oh, so you hadn't booked the trip yet?
No, we haven't, no.
That makes it easier.
Yes, it does. The beauty of now being child-free and, you know, not being restricted to school holidays is we can just book on a, you know, the drop of a hat and off we go kind of thing. So Kath did have leave approved for July, which she's going to let go and, you know, get something else booked when we know what we're doing. So, yeah. So it might be August and it might be later than that. We just don't know yet. But we'll get there.
So the first thing I'd have been doing is researching what sort of festivals we're going to be on. And trying to time myself around an event that was happening over there. So
okay.
Yep. That's always my first priority. But because my priority is to go look for people. So, sure. I mean, anytime I travel, it's like, I've got a Lonely Planet thing that's put up a good book about where to go when.
Oh, nice.
And it's like, it's every month of the year. It doesn't cover everything, but it covers a lot of the big festivals in the world.
All the major
different
stuff.
Countries. So if you say, I want to go somewhere in August, what's on, you can look it up and see what festivals are on and that kind of stuff. So,
cool.
Yeah, so your week's been pretty good, basically, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I worked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, had today off, got tomorrow off.
Oh, that's not bad. 4-day weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. If totally. You can afford to do it, it's pretty.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Even I could almost handle doing 3 days a week.
And even better.
Yeah.
The manager of the station at Newcastle, she also manages Muswellbrook and Gosford. And she said to me, maybe not next week, but certainly from the week after, she said, we'll try and get you set up in the office at Gosford so that you don't have to come all the way up to Newcastle.
Wow. How close is Gosford?
Oh, 5 minutes from home.
Oh, I love that.
Totally. I've never had a commute that short.
Oh, brilliant.
So, yeah.
See, if you don't need to be on location to do what you do.
No, well, that's brilliant. I mean, with the exception of needing access to the, you know, the on-air broadcast system to load in the things that I've mixed, yeah. I could work from home. But you know, you can't log into those things because they're behind a firewall, obviously. So I need to be able to get to an ABC studio to, you know, put my stuff into the system. But, yeah, if I can do a day or two of those 3 days from Gosford, that will just be absolutely icing on the cake. So anyway, it's all good.
Awesome.
So what do you got on your list?
Me? Well, first up, the Prime Minister of Australia died today.
The former.
Or the ex one.
One of our former Prime Ministers, Mr.
Well, I think the political career of a current one might be in jeopardy, too, frankly. I heard today, so for those not in our locale, we have our general election on Saturday, so in 2 days
federal.
From now.
Yep,
federal election. But here's a sports bet. One of our biggest betting agencies in the country just paid out today on the opposition. So if you'd bet for the opposition to win, they paid out everyone's bets as if they'd won.
What?
They're that confident that the opposition's getting in. Whoa. They paid out $1.3 million in bets.
Wow. That can't be all of the bets.
I don't know how many people bet on the election, but $1.3 million is a fair amount.
It is a fair amount.
I thought. Some guy apparently bet $130,000 or bet to win $130,000. And so he's got now $130,000. Yeah.
Wow.
So that might give a fair indication of how the election's going.
But I wonder what's going to happen if the betting agency gets it wrong.
Well,
I suppose they've got to wear it. They've got to wear it.
Yeah, they paid out as a win. Bad luck.
That is crazy.
How bizarre. How absolutely bizarre.
Crazy. So that'll all be past history by the time this podcast comes out.
Yes, it'll be a whole new world or the same one.
Yes.
And frankly, I've got to say, as a keen political watcher for these last 35-odd years, 40 years, nothing's ever changed.
No.
Doesn't matter who's in. My life stays the same.
I've got to say I am more disillusioned with politics now than I've ever been.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've never been illusioned, but I'm certainly disillusioned. Yes. Yeah.
I feel like it's a case of which Muppet's going to do the least amount of damage.
Yeah. As long as nothing affects me, I don't care. No, it's just a terrible situation. So anyway, that's enough of it. Should never talk about politics.
Photography.
Let's talk about sex. Or religion. Let's go there next. So, I've got my first thing, my first cab off the rank.
Yeah.
Is
a moon photograph.
A guy took a photo of a moon. And by a photo, I mean 250,000 photos of the moon and composite. 250,000 photos.
As you do.
From his backyard. Now, I've got to say, it's a pretty darn good. Looking at it from a distance, it's a pretty darn good looking thing. But so I'm thinking that the reason that I sort of put it up was not so much that the picture quality, you know, or the picture, was the thinking, my God, if he's shooting with a normal SLR.
Yeah,
that's the entire shutter gone.
The shutter life of the camera gone. Yeah,
in the one photo, but he wasn't. He was using a special Astro camera,
right.
a $250 ZWO HS1224MC. As you do, catchy name, people. Yes. You've really captured the market with that one. I tell you, a $250 camera, and then used a whole bunch of processes. So he uses what's called Photoshop big files, which I've never heard of.
No.
PSBs. So he created a 3 gigabyte PSB.
Wow.
And then flattened and downscaled to create the shot. But the problem is I downloaded the photo to look at.
Yeah.
And it's really crappy quality when you look it up close.
Oh, really?
And he took a photo with the stars are done with his A7 II,
yep,
mirrorless. But when you look at the stars up close, they're just some of the just the most awful blobs. And
yep.
So yeah, it kind of looks pretty from a distance, a bit like me. Look okay from a distance until you get me up close. Right. Then I'm fabulous.
So when you say it doesn't look so crash hot up close, is it that there's motion blur or?
No, it's just no. Well, I think it might be motion blur and just some sort of strange stretching and pixeling. Who knows what with the with the stars?
Yeah.
And then there's no real detail on the moon. There's no real quality. Yeah, it's like if you shot with a really low resolution camera and then zoomed in too much, it just loses all its detail, its fine detail. So looking back from a distance, it looks good. It's just when you go close, it really falls apart.
Yeah, right.
But it's a spectacular looking image.
It's interesting because just looking at the, you know, the small version that's in the blog post,
yeah,
I noticed that there's this band that kind of runs from the 11 o'clock position down to the 6 o'clock position,
yeah,
that seems to be contrasty and sharp, but everything to the left of it and everything to the right of it seems to be quite dull and flat. I don't know if that's just because of the nature of the craters on the surface that, you know, provide a little bit of highlight and shadow that creates that, or if it's...
Yeah, the only place in astrophotography, in photos of the moon where you'll see detail is the line between light and shadow.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Okay, because you look at a full moon, it's all flat.
Yep.
Because so basically what you've got on the far left is all the full moon.
Yep.
It's flat. On the right-hand side, it's all shade, so yep, it's flat.
Yep.
But the division between light and shadow is yep, where you see all the texture and detail. So whenever you look at the moon through a telescope, that's the spot you go for.
Yep.
You don't want to look at the moon. You don't want to look at the full moon through a telescope because you don't get any crater depth or any sort of yeah, you know, detail. But so, yeah, I'm all your detail really is
if
there.
If you had the time and the motivation to shoot 250,000 images, couldn't you have got every part of it looking great?
Yeah, I mean, couldn't you go out on multiple nights
yeah,
and shoot each phase as it goes through?
Exactly.
And collate them all together so it all has that same, yeah. So you have a full moon that has the detail of each quarter. I'm going to email them and say, dude, get your act together.
Get
it, yeah. Do a decent
lift your game.
You're wasting their time. You're wasting your time and ours, frankly.
That's right.
Went on a stabbing spree at the inflatable school. You've let yourself down, you've got your teachers down, your school down, everybody down. Yeah, we were thinking for a while the where to in photography.
Mm.
You know, I mean, we've seen all the HDRs have been done to death, the composites, all this. So, I mean, this new world of the 100,000 images to make an image. This whole stuff is starting to develop, which is completely like the next level, full on photography.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious to see where our photography world develops over the next couple of years, mm, where this sort of stuff becomes a lot more accessible to do. You know, for the average
yeah,
punter.
And once you know machine learning and AI gets in onto the game of handling the capture of all of these yeah, frames, you know, what will that do?
It'll be interesting to watch. So we're talking about, you know, the cameras aren't going to have any more megapixels and the lenses aren't going to be resolving any more detail, but this is the next evolution seen before our eyes. The next thing I've got down there is a little new thing from a company that had a thing.
Camtraptions.
Camtraptions.
Right.
So it's for basically people do time lapses or have wildlife traps set up. It's a waterproof housing, but hey, it fits any SLR,
right?
Which I thought was pretty nice. If you look at the picture on the back,
the size of the thing. I saw the image up the top and thought, oh, this is a really tiny thing for little compacts. And then you scroll down and you see.
No, this will hold a 1DX Mark II, which is a damn big camera.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, but just the way they use that little stepping system and the little yep, platform, so it doesn't matter what size camera you've got, yep, it'll fit in there.
Yep.
I thought, why has no one thought of this before? Yeah. It's so damn simple.
Very
know?
Simple, yeah.
But a really cool setup. It looks like a fabulous, if you're into that sort of stuff,
yeah,
you know, you're always looking for solutions to protect your gear, to yeah, but and maybe to, yeah, not... And this is one of the problems when you go and buy an underwater housing for a camera, as an example.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a serious one. Those can set you back $3,000 or $4,000.
Jeez.
And it's only good for that one model of camera.
Yes.
So if you upgrade your camera in a couple of years, well, you've got to upgrade your housing again. So every time you buy a new camera, you're doubling it. You have a $4,000 SLR, it's a $4,000 housing as well. So, so this sort of setup is really, really kind of cool, I thought.
But this doesn't look like it's a thing you can put your hands through to.
No, because it's designed for remote shooting.
Right, okay.
So either you're setting it up via Wi-Fi with your camera, or you set the camera up before you put it in
the
housing. Then you might be leaving it for 2 days to do a time lapse.
Right, okay.
Or overnight for every night for a week trying to do animal photography.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You're not there when it's shooting.
Wow.
Which is, of course, why you have to put your hands in it, Bruce. I'll tell you one thing. We know for sure you're an audio engineer because you're no bloody rocket scientist. What else have I got? Oh, yeah, so DJI, our fabulous company of DJI, have come out with a new action camera.
Yes.
Now, I've seen lots of people come out with action cameras. I'm going, why bother?
Yep.
GoPro's got the market. Even they can't make money.
Yeah.
So why don't you go into a field that is dominated by one brand, and the one brand that's dominating can't even make money that they're dominating? Stupid.
Yeah.
But they've done the smartest of smart things, and they put a screen next to the lens.
For selfie mode.
Who uses these cameras the most? All these bloody vloggers, all these people videoing themselves for YouTube by the hundreds of thousands, and none of them see themselves when they're filming.
Yeah. Yeah.
So finally, they get used to guessing the angles.
Yeah.
But this is going to provide significantly improved footage for a whole range of stuff.
Yeah.
Because you can see where you hang the damn camera at.
Yeah.
Really, really clever idea. Apparently, their image stabilization is fabulous.
Another one for the why didn't somebody think of this sooner category.
Well, that's it. Yeah. The screen in the front, it's just is so damn simple.
Yeah.
So the image stabilization, and it apparently does constant HDR too, or as a mode
where
it can do HDR video.
Wow.
But I'm led to believe you can't do HDR video and image stabilize at the same time.
Right.
So your image both looks great and crappy at the same time. Or that's it. So either you don't use the HDR and it's really smooth but the footage is crappy, or you use the HDR so the footage is good but it's jerky so it's crappy.
Yeah.
It's a lose-lose situation. But it looks like that's certainly something I'm going to explore when it comes out.
Yeah, right.
As a camera. I think it's pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
So I think it's coming out at the end of this month, I think. For the US is about $349, so I'm expecting about $599 each Australian.
Right.
Which puts it in line with the top-of-the-range GoPro.
Right.
And the top-of-the-range GoPro doesn't have that extra screen. So,
yeah, nice.
Yeah, looks pretty good value. Really good. Now, there's rumours circulating, speaking of new cameras, about a new Canon Pro SLR. I think we mentioned it briefly, or I was thinking it in my head briefly last week or the week before, that with the Olympics coming up, it seems the perfect time for Canon to update their 1DX Mark II.
Right.
So I've got a feeling there's a 1DX Mark III and possibly an EOS R Pro coming out.
Okay.
But the rumour is 30 frames a second.
That's video. Photo. Why would you bother?
Well, it depends what you're photographing.
Yeah, okay.
So this guy who's putting stuff out, a Canon ambassador, a guy called Andy Rouse, he's a professional wildlife photographer.
Yep.
And he put this photo up on May the 3rd of a cuckoo landing.
Okay.
And he says he's been shooting these things for years and never been able to photograph the entire landing sequence in one go.
Right.
Because the frame rate doesn't allow.
Yeah.
You know how fast, you know how hard it is to photograph a bird or taking off. It's so damn explosive and fast.
Yep.
So this thing is photographing aspects of something he's been photographing for years in a new way.
Yeah, nice.
So I can certainly say, and once again, if you're doing sports photography,
30
frames in a second is giving you some hell of a good opportunities to capture the decisive moment more accurately than you ever would be able to. So. Once again, looking at where that camera's aimed at, which is sports and wildlife, it's pretty darn cool.
I don't know what the burst rate is on my A7 III. I think it shoots at 11 frames a second or something. And I put it on the highest burst rate because you've actually got three different levels for the motor drive. So you've got slow, medium, and fast. And I put it on the fast mode and just thought, why on earth would you want this? You know, because it just seems so crazy responsive. Like you barely touch the button and you've fired off, you know, 6 or 8 frames.
Well, my mate,
but I guess there are some people that
Bangladesh.
Yeah,
my mate Yusuf in Bangladesh uses it in his travel photography all the time.
In travel,
he might have this little. Yeah, he might have this little kid jumping up and down or throwing stuff up into the air.
Yeah.
And so once again, it's the timing of getting that all that stuff coming together in the right spot where the hands and just the nicest spot and the stuff that's being thrown in the air. Let's say you've got a kid grabbing a bucket load of chilies, red chilies, and throwing them up in the air.
Right.
Now, the make or break of that shot is getting everything, so maybe there's no chilies going across the eyes,
yes,
the hands are in good spots. Yep. The more frames you've got to choose from,
the better your chances.
Yeah, and you get the kid to do it 2 or 3 times, you know, you've got 30 shots to choose from. Or, I mean, the Canon 1DX Mark II, which is what he uses, that could shoot 14 frames a second.
Right.
Yeah, and so you've got, yeah, there's 40-odd images to choose from to see which is the best possible one. And this guy wins awards all over the damn world for his travel stuff, so he's, yeah, right. He's taking advantage of.
Can't argue with it then.
Yeah. So once again, there's certainly a place for. I've been having this discussion online today on the Narbox.
Oh yeah.
Narbox users page, because they ask the question, just, yeah, what do you prefer to shoot, RAW or JPEG?
Yeah.
There's always people jumping on. So you can only, you're never allowed to use JPEG. You got to, yeah, hammering in these. You must use RAW bloody thing. And I'm, yeah. and they knew. They know my thoughts on it. The people in Narbox, they were waiting for me to jump in. So jumping deep I did. And it's all about, you know, what's right for you and works for your workflow. You might have a need for 14 frames a second, but it doesn't mean other people don't. You might not have a need, your style of photography may not allow the use of JPEGs,
yep,
but mine does.
Yeah.
So don't say I'm wrong because I do what I do. You know?
For sure.
And then there's a thing on the Petapixel Day about the new Tamron 35-150, and some of the comments down there are, I dismissed this. This is not good for me. This is dismal. It's like, hey, they've seen some really poor shots done by an average photographer in pretty crappy conditions,
looking for DP review
and on online resolution, and made judgment calls on it. It's like, for God's sake, people, just don't. If it's not right for you, fine, shut up.
Yeah.
The whole internet should shut up. me. I should possibly shut up. It's been said to me before. It won't be the last time. anyway, so an interesting thing happened today in America.
Oh?
Where Donald Trump signed a national emergency bill.
Oh, I know. This is ridiculous.
Oh, I would say it's ridiculous. for hoo-hi, hoo-ha, hoo-hoo,
Huawei.
That's them. There's a lot of hoo-ha about hoo-ha. So it's a national emergency. So hoo-hoos would be banned to be being bought into government or anything like that, and they're not allowed to use them.
Right.
Right. And in fact, and basically it's anything made in China. Electronic that has the ability to transfer information back to head office is being banned. Yeah. So I'm thinking, what if your camera's made in China and it's got Wi-Fi capabilities or whatever the more modern cameras have?
Yep.
Will that maybe expand to that? A camera company's going to be having trouble supplying their gear into America if these sort of laws tighten up and become too strict. It's interesting.
Sorry, I'm sorry, zoned out while you were talking, because I was reading a paragraph further down that says, in August 2019.
Really?
I'm looking at it right now. In August 2019, Australia banned Huawei and other companies likely to be subject to. Well, that's in the future.
It was August 2018. We talked about it last year.
Oh, so it's just a typo.
I remember that happening last year.
Right.
Huawei. were banned from the 5G.
Right.
And look, it's a very well known thing that they have been sending information back to China via WhoWho's stuff. It's not. If I say who, I can't get sued. This is a company out there called WhoWho. So all major US wireless carriers and internet providers, this is the next paragraph, had already sworn off Chinese-made equipment after a 2012 report by the House Intelligence Committee said that WhoWho and ZTE, China's number two telecoms company, should be excluded as enablers of Beijing-directed espionage.
Right.
This has been since 2012. They've been knowing that. You remember these companies can send back enormous amounts of data back to the head office. It's not overly paranoid to be thinking maybe we should restrict who gets on our inside our military establishments and our government establishments and what sort of technology they're reporting to. Yeah, so to me, it's not. But my interest in that really was what about cameras? What about all the stuff that could lead from that. Paranoia gets stronger and stronger with more people like Big Donny Boy in charge and any of the other countries are full of weirdos like your North Korea's, your China's.
Yep.
There's only one China, so I shouldn't know. I thought it was an interesting article. Is that something to keep an eye out just to see if I think most of the high end like Canon, Nikons, and stuff and Sony's maybe are made in Japan, which might circumvent that. But certainly a lot of the entry level stuff is made in China.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Interesting.
Now I saw a cool video on Peter Pixel.
Oh yeah.
I'm going to call it Peter Pixel from now on because I'm weird that way. But this guy is shooting a video of birds flying in a circle up in the air, whilst they were driving down the road at about 80 miles an hour,
right?
And the weird instance of the video frame rate, the motion of the car, and the circling of the birds makes the birds look like they're frozen in midair. They're not moving.
Nice.
It's so cool.
Yeah, I'll have to watch that.
I'm watching it right now as we speak. It's very cool, but it's this freaky bit of footage. So I thought that was interesting. And I've got one here called A Love-Hate Relationship. This is probably the only decent article for the week, so listen up, everybody. It's all downhill from here. And this is a tourism campaign for Kerala, India.
Right.
Done by Joey Lawrence.
Okay.
Joey Lawrence is one of the few photographers I ever pay any attention to. Not, once again, because I think anyone's better, or I'm better than them, I don't look for inspiration from other photographers. I'm not out there looking for technique. But I love this kid. He's like probably 26 now or something. But what I liked about the article is really showing an in-depth behind the scenes about how he set up this campaign. So he's got sketches of the initial idea of the photo and then the reality of what they came out with and lots of cool information. And there's a line here I've only flicked through it, haven't actually read it, but I think people would like to. There's a really cool line. Our crew is now getting exhausted. We're up before the sun and the sounds of Kochi. It's a beautiful time in the city. The calm we share with only the earliest to the fishermen. It was important for us to get organized before the rest of Kochi awake and filled the empty spaces we needed to shoot. I just love that.
Yeah.
You got up early and you're sitting in this chaotic metropolis before the people filled the spaces.
Yep.
And that's such an evocative image to me. I want to photograph that image. That's how evocative it is. But, yeah, so it's stuff like that. It's just a beautiful viewpoint and some seriously cool portraits in this Communist Party of India headquarters.
Yep.
Yeah, there's some seriously cool images there. But Joey L, he's a master. I never use the term, but he's a master photographer. The stuff he does. And this is some of his more subtle work. But the great thing about it, if you look at these photos, they're as shot just about. Yeah, right. There's a little bit of color grading, a little bit. But yeah, this is a photographer working here. This is not a Photoshop. Working here.
Yes.
So look through these photos and study the joy, the beauty of what's been created, and it's some very cool stuff. So if you have any interest in people or travel or just the mindset of a great photographer, check this. And if you don't know Joey Lawrence, check out his shit. He's the bomb. So to me, it's a love-hate relationship because I love the guy, but gee, I hate that he's so good. Eight. Then last week we talked about this astro photos, all the cloning and stuff.
Yeah, the National Geographic stuff, yep.
We did. No, I'm quite disappointed in both of us.
Oh.
Mostly myself.
Okay.
Always you, because, you know, you're there. That none of us took the piss out of the fact that her name was Moon and she did astro photos.
Yes.
I think it's worth revisiting, if nothing else, just for that.
I did mention her name at the time, but I wasn't going to make fun of it.
How disappointing is this? You know, it's like, what's wrong with us? Yeah. But there's another article up there about a whole bunch of stuff, and also a note from the photographer whose late response was due to the fact that she was burying her father,
yeah.
Which is a fair excuse, but not necessary. But she basically says, "Nah, I didn't do anything wrong." But this article points out even more, because it's all the science about where the Milky Way should be.
Yeah.
That these are actually taken in Northern Hemisphere, but the land's in the Southern Hemisphere. Oh. And they're still claiming. And then there's a response from National Geo at the bottom, saying they're taking the articles down. They're doing a full investigation, to check the veracity of the photographs.
Wow.
Because they're all about the reality. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
And finally, I learned something new.
Yeah.
In photography.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's taking photos of things I didn't even know existed. And there still might be a refraction on his lens. But this guy is a sprite chaser.
A what?
A sprite chaser.
What's a sprite? He chases
sprite. I'm glad you asked. So during lightning storms, there can be this thing that happens above the clouds, usually not visible to the naked eye, which is why it's hard to take photos of.
Right.
And usually only ever seen in video and captured still frames, but this guy's taking still photos of this type of light that happens above storms, and they're called sprites. So if you click on the link to the website,
I'm looking at the images.
It's stuff above the light. It's just kind of weird stuff, you know? Wow. I once met a crazy lady by a lake who ushered us into her gypsy caravan to show us her orb photos, her orb photography she does.
Right.
And it's basically whenever a little bit of dust catches from the flash of your compact camera, creates a little orb. So she's kind of worshipping the orb.
Right.
This guy does this bright lighting, and he's got this video of the first time ever seeing it with his naked eye, which is quite amazing. The thing is, this guy does workshops teaching you to do these things.
Right.
But how can you be guaranteed there's going to be a storm?
I know.
That's a fair effort, you know.
I mean, it's obviously an area where, you know, storms are regular.
It's planned for the dark nights available and during the storm season.
Yeah.
So, interesting, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
but man, I've never seen those things in the sky.
No, I've never even seen photos of them.
But it's probably because, you know, the majority of times when you are witnessing lightning, you're generally looking at an entire sky covered in cloud. It's pretty rare to actually see a break in the clouds and be able to see above the clouds at the same time that you're seeing lightning.
You know, when you see a storm coming in over the ocean, you're watching the lightning and you're this clear sky in front of it. I've still, over all the thousands of lightning photos I've seen over the years, I've never seen a photo of a sprite above it.
Never. Never.
Yeah. So it's interesting, yeah?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that was something different.
Very.
So all power to him.
Yeah.
So it's what massive things do you have on your list, dude?
Well, I did see something come through this week on Will Shipton's newsletter about the Lisa Sard debacle. Inside Imager. Okay. Yes. So, you know, we covered this story, you know, a couple of months ago when the whole Lisa Sard thing broke big news around the world. The AIPP has now retrospectively granted a whole bunch of awards from 2015 through to 2018, which were originally given to Lisa, to all of the runners-up. So that has sort of come out this week. Yeah, there's probably half a dozen different names that have appeared across all of these. What is there? There must be about 12 or 15 categories there that have all had new winners awarded.
Well, a guy I know was awarded this week, and he's posting on Facebook saying he'd been. And
who's the guy you know?
I don't know if I should say because Because it'll be fairly obvious if you, well, it'll be a limited group when I mention what is. So he won commercial, he was re-awarded as Commercial Photographer of the Year. And this guy does, and I've seen him shoot, so it's real stuff.
Right.
Does fabulous, fabulous urban artscapes.
Okay.
You know, his photography is fabulous. But again, he's won Commercial Photographer of the Year award for self-commissioned work.
What?
Well, this is the thing. This is what Lisa won. Her photos were self-commissioned art, winning Commercial Photographer of the Year awards. And I just can't come at that.
You know, no. When you name the category commercial photographer, it should be commissioned work, like not something that you did as a personal project.
But see, they're self-commissioning for the point of producing a book or whatever, which I can see the connection. I can see the, but it's somewhat tenuous.
Yeah.
Yeah. What if the book never comes to fruition? Do you have to have actually produced that book and then say, okay, it was part of this commissioned work, which is a finished piece of work?
Yeah.
But then again, at the same time, what if you were commissioned by Vogue to shoot some shots and they never end up using the photos? It was still commissioned work, you know, even though it never actually got commercially used. It's tricky, isn't it? Yeah. As soon as you start setting a category, well, how do you define? And what's the definitions and what's the boundaries and what's the limitations and what are the exclusions?
But
I do struggle with self-commissioned work.
That strikes me as just being a personal project.
Yeah.
You know?
But a personal project with the intent of being, commercially, making money from it by selling books, but it's a bit odd. So I see here that all the award winners' cash, gear, and vouchers have now been allocated to the rightful winners.
Well, not the cash because Lisa got that.
They've been denied. No, it says while the award winners' cash, gear, and vouchers have now been allocated. So did they get it back from her? Did they get new stuff from sponsors day and out? And how do you? So it's saying it's cost the AIPP a minimum of $28,000 in prize money and trophies.
Yeah. So in other words, they've had to come up with the cash a second time around.
As she added, the AIPP was attempting to recover some of these lost funds, obviously presumably from Lisa herself.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting to see how that that works.
Wow. Anyway, and we got three stories from Adam this week. The first was the use of older Adobe Creative Cloud apps could get you sued, Adobe warns. Now, there's a paragraph that I copied out of this story that said, but to make things clear, it's not Adobe who's threatening to sue you. They have probably licensed tech from third-party companies in older versions of CC apps. Now, this license has expired and those third-party companies might go after you if you keep using them, as that is the apps. Something similar happened last year when Adobe removed a few versions of Adobe Premiere Pro due to Dolby licensing issues. So, yes, the story has come out this week that Adobe has been sending out this letter to users that, you know, because obviously those apps phone home when you use them and you are logged in to the Creative Cloud account. And when Adobe
has realized, also phone home to China too.
Yeah,
so that China can see what you've been
talking
about. So
Adobe's aware that some people are still using old versions of the apps because they haven't switched on automatic updates. And so they've been sending out this, this letter just saying to people, hey, you know, be aware that this is no longer licensed. You're no longer permitted to use it. And the guy who tweeted this said, I just got an email from Adobe that I'm no longer allowed to use the software that I'm paying for. Time to cancel my subscription, I guess. But, them's the breaks, I guess. The next story that Adam sent us was Olympus marks its 100th anniversary with a documentary detailing their 100-year evolution. What I thought was interesting out of this story was Olympus Company wasn't always called Olympus. It began life as Takachiho Seisakusho. and they focused on making microscopes for the domestic market. I cannot understand why they changed their name, Glenn. That just rolls off the tongue. It was so much so much simpler. Anyway, I haven't watched the doco, so for anyone that wants to watch the doco, the link will be in the show notes. And the last one from Adam was an argument over why the whole 72 DPI or PPI thing is a myth for the images that we upload to the web. Now, some image editing apps allow you to specify how many dots per inch you want in your image when you export. So, you know, like from Lightroom or from Photoshop or whatever. And the guy who's writing this, Sean Bagshaw, is basically saying when it comes to displaying images on the web, it doesn't matter. All that matters is the actual pixel resolution of the image. The number of dots per inch or pixels per inch is only a factor if you want to print your images. And what I liked was the fact that he has a paragraph in there that says, for reference, a 1500 by 1000 pixel image will print 5 inches wide with the print resolution set at 300 ppi. 1500 by 1000 is the size I currently use for most of the images I share on the web. It's big enough to mostly fill a 1920 by 1080p HD monitor, but small enough to not make high detailed large prints. And I thought, that's pretty much been my mindset for quite a while as well. I, you know, the images I put on Instagram are generally 2000 by 2000, which, you know, still doesn't mean you could print them to any great size. Not that I expect anyone would bother. But yeah, I thought it was just interesting that, you know, my mindset was pretty much where his was. Hello? Sorry.
What?
It's all right. Podcast's over.
What? I can go to bed now. Yeah. I need a nap before I go to sleep. What was that? Some mentioned about resolution or something?
No.
You say you want a resolution.
That's
what?
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's it. I think we've done it. I think we've nailed it. I think we've just bolted through that one. It was twice as long as last week's with half the content. It's great. It's just, yeah.
Excellent. Excellent.
So that's it. Enjoy your long weekend.
I will. I'm actually organising a photo shoot for next week.
Really? What are you going to shoot?
Yes. For the 8 years that I've been up here, I've been thinking, I really have to do a shoot one autumn when all the trees are in colour. I've never done it. Huh. You know, I tried to do it at Mount Wilson 3 years ago with Aimer and our Little Red Riding Hood shoot, but we ended up being there probably a week too early. And I just thought, nah, got to do it this year. You know, there's some really nice areas not far from where I live where, you know, there's lots of really nice deciduous trees with their, you know, leaves all changing colour and looking fantastic. And, yeah, so I reached out to Tegan, girl I've shot with a few times in the past, and said, feel like doing a, you know, an autumn colours kind of shoot? And she said, yep, love to. So, yeah, so we're aiming for Thursday morning next week. So,
how many times has she cancelled on you?
Never.
Oh, that's a good start.
She is solid, yeah. I've shot with her 3 or 4 times, yeah. 4 times, I think. So, and yeah, never cancelled.
Okay.
So
go and look at the Joey Lawrence article.
Yes. Okay.
Read about planning.
Okay.
Then go and find some really good autumn photos that inspire you.
Yep.
And then kind of knock up some of your own, you know, do some little sketches and some little concepts. Solve the problems before you go. Look at the photos. See, you know, what is get find out what is each about each one of them that you like. You know, okay. Draw some lines on them. Find out, are they repeating patterns? Is it the type of auto type of blur they're using? Is it the color pattern of clothing to background? Yeah, what are the things that make the image work?
Yep.
And try and see if you can incorporate some of them into your photos. Go in with it more than just a plan of a girl in front of color, because okay. That's not going to work.
Okay.
I guarantee you right now, you're going to do an autumn shoot,
mm-hmm.
and that's as much that you thought, oh, I love the coloured trees. That's like going, oh, I'm going to go to this location and take a photo. it ain't going to work. The photos will be crap.
Okay.
Think of the whole process through. Match the wardrobe to the scene. Are you trying for warmth? Are you trying to look cold?
I'd like her to structure the wardrobe around blues so that we get the contrast of colours.
Okay.
And
so that's almost the antithesis of what most people do for autumn, where they normally go the warms.
Okay? I know.
But I'm doing that deliberately. That's fine. There's nothing wrong. And I applaud you for it. Are you going to try and make her look cold?
No. Oh, as in, yeah. Like I'll have her rugged up.
But are you going to try and put some light on her that's cool as a juxtaposition to the... Because if you've got warm afternoon sun, warm morning sunlight.
Yep.
Yeah, all the skin tones are going to blow really warm.
Mm-hmm.
So is that...
The thinking that I had done so far was that I would be going for a lot of backlit stuff where I will have the light hitting the trees and being behind her so that, you know, you're getting that really nice bright yellow and orange and, you know, reds coming off the leaves because they're backlit. And so I was anticipating taking a, you know, light stand and a softbox and chucking a, you know, probably a half CTO gel on there and experiment as we go.
Well, cool. I'm looking forward to the episode. No, that's fine. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the episode.
Okay.
Where we look at the photos.
Right.
Yeah, but just try and get one good photo, Bruce.
Okay.
No, I'm not saying, so put all your effort into getting one shot really, really good. Don't worry about doing too many photos.
Okay.
Or too many setups.
Right.
Put all your heart and energy into trying to produce one killer shot.
Okay.
So that means thinking about which lens do I need for that shot? You know, what kind of background tones do I need and whereabouts like that? Try to think all the process through.
Yeah.
So you're getting there with as clear an idea as possible. And hopefully you know the area well enough to know that if that's going to be possible to do there.
Yeah.
Nothing worse than with only one idea in your head and you get there and you can't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, don't feel the need. Think you're doing a front cover of a magazine.
Right.
You've got one shot.
Yeah.
Go get that one shot.
Okay.
Because that one shot will mean more to you. One great shot will mean more to you than half a dozen average ones.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And if you can get the one shot in pretty early and you're pretty confident you've got it, then you can free to it. Yeah. Then you relax and enjoy yourself and shoot whatever.
Yeah.
But go with that focus of crafting one fabulous shot. Take 10 minutes to set it up and 1 minute to shoot it.
Right.
Yeah. Take all the time necessary. Think through the problems. Think about body angles. I mean, yeah, positioning, shape, tone, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. The more you can sort of, yeah, pre-visualize. And I'm not a big advocate for myself. I never pre-visualize shoots. I go and see what's there. But I think it as a learning tool to come up with one concept to try and make it happen on one image
could be
a really good thing for you.
Okay.
We'll see how you go.
I will do what I can.
it's like when you went out with the 15 with a really wide angle lens to Mardi Gras. Yep. It changed everything about your viewpoint, your thinking process, where you needed to stand. That's a evolutionary step in photography to have to change the way you would normally shoot.
Yeah.
And it gives you a whole new look to your images and forces you to step out of your comfort zone a lot more because of how close you have to be. It's all this kind of stuff. It's the same thing. Try and work. Go and search through all the great fall images you can see.
Yeah.
And see if you can find something that speaks to you that would suit this girl and her look. And okay. Not say copy it, but try and use the elements that work that are strong that you like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay.
Well, have fun.
Thank you, mate.
And I'll talk to you next week.
Will do. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Shutters Inc. Another audiotu.com quality podcast. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.